the kind of vitamins you take can greatly affect your comprehension. And as far as the Neurofoam itself goes, the Neurofoam, because it does enter a new channel, is used as a learning machine. We have a number of people who, for example, could not pass board exams. We have attorneys, we have doctors, and people who could not get through their board exams, and yet when they recorded the notes that they wanted to learn on a tape recorder and then listened to it through the Neurofoam several times, they were able to pass their exams because it transmitted the information directly into their brain. The other thing is that there's been a study done a number of years ago which showed that IQ is a function of the efficiency of the brain, and that the efficiency of the brain can be improved. And basically, they were able to measure the efficiency of the brain with a device known as a neural efficiency analyzer, which measured the response of the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere of the brain to a flash of light. And they should respond simultaneously, but they don't. There's always a slight delay. One side responds first, and then the other one responds. And what they found out is that the longer the time difference between this response, the lower the IQ. And IQ tests always aren't that accurate. So you may have a problem with something that has to do with brain development when you were younger. For example, Glenn Doman of the Human Potentials Institute in Philadelphia found out that when we're children, for example, we have to do certain physical functions in order to develop our brains. And, for example, if our mothers, by some error, were to put us in a crib so that we couldn't crawl when we were at the stage where we're supposed to crawl all over the house. In other words, she didn't want to mess with it, so she locked you in a crib or something. If that happened, that area of your brain was not developed, and that tends to retard the development of other areas of the brain later on as we're growing up. And what Dr. Glenn Doman discovered is that if you go back and do these things, for example, crawl around on all fours and things like that for a period of time, it redevelops that part of the brain, and then the rest of it increases and follows. So there are a number of things people can do to increase their IQ and to increase their comprehension. The Neurofoam might help. But, again, the Neurofoam, when used in conjunction with a lot of these other things, would help. And Dr. Doman's books, by the way, are available. And if you go to the bookstore, you can order them. It's Dr. Glenn Doman, D-O-M-A-N. And also, I really think the Neurofoam might be of help in that area.
Well, also, I had a couple of shock treatments when I was 17 years old, and I'm 57 now. And it seems like I want to learn, but it seems like I'm kind of fenced in. I can't go beyond a certain point to understand and comprehend so I can absorb.
Right.
And I was hoping that...
Well, it's really hard to say. I know that there are people who have used the Neurofoam who say that it has helped them to learn. There was a gentleman in Canada that was in a logging accident, and his skull was crushed, and he was in a coma for several months, and when he came out, he was like a newborn baby. And he was not progressing. He couldn't learn anything. And his mother and father started using a Neurofoam on him, and he progressed very, very rapidly. And today he's absolutely normal. And so in that particular case, it had helped out a lot. But it's really hard to say. There are so many factors involved.
Do you think... have any doctors been making research with multiple sclerosis and the Neurofoam and arthritis?
The Neurofoam is not a healing. It's not a device that is approved for medical usage. The minute you start talking about specific things like MS and all that, then the Neurofoam is not licensed or authorized by the FDA as a medical instrument. It's a device that may improve the efficiency of the brain balance, things like that, but it's not a medical device, so there's no research in that area.
Well, do you hold seminars, or could you make a recorded cassettes of seminars, or have a newsletter so that we can subscribe to it?
If you write the address or call, we will send you some information. And Gail and I used to give seminars, but we found out we could be much more effective working in our laboratory in Sedona and sending out audio cassette tapes. We're also going to, in the future, make video cassette tapes available of seminars.
Oh, wonderful. But do you also say you're in Sedona, and then you have this Novato address.
Our office is in Novato. Our laboratory is in Sedona. Our office is a point of communications. If you want to find out any information or communicate with us, you have to go through our office.
And then it'd be nice if you have a question and answer column so I could ask you about the water crystals, which I missed out on last weekend.
Gail and I put out an audio newsletter, which consists of cassette tapes in which we talk about various things. And on our audio newsletter tapes, we talk about water. We talk about distilled water, water distillers. We talk about the Neurophone, a new air purifier we developed known as the electron field generator.
Our travels, our research.
Our travels around the world, our research. All of that is on these tapes. And so a number of people have subscribed to the audio newsletter. And each tape, right now there are three tapes out. We're planning on putting out two more tapes in the very near future. And the subscription is for six tapes. They're put out on an irregular basis because we don't put out a tape until we have something that we feel is important to say. And now we've accumulated enough that a new tape is going to come out very soon. So that's one way to obtain information about all this is to contact our office and ask for information on what is available.
An hour-long tape just on the water that answers all your questions.
Oh, thank you very, very much. I know I'm going to feel much better and my sinuses will improve too. Because we have a biological clock in our bodies. I know that because
I don't know why.
I wake up at between 3 and 3:30 in the morning, and I'll cough, and I have phlegm, cough, and phlegm, and I do it every once in a while.
Well.
And I think if I had some of those water with those water crystals, it might improve my health.
There's no way of knowing.
Well, good luck to you.
Good luck.
Also, I wanted to say that I can't have anything lactic, and I think that water might improve my health so that I could drink milk and have cheese without
any effect. Well, milk is very bad for you anyway.
Oh, well, thank you very, very much.
Okay.
All right, Stella,
okay,
thank
bye-bye.
You. I'm Bill Jenkins.
For Dr. Flanagan, I'll try to be brief. how can I tell if a crystal is a quartz crystal?
Well,
I bought one at Sears, and it was a cut. There we had a beautiful display.
Most of those crystals are lead glass crystals, and they are not actual crystals. They are what are known as amorphous substances, and most of the cut crystals, like you buy in, they're like multifaceted.
Yes.
Are usually lead glass, and when you buy one, you have to ask. Quartz crystals are extremely expensive when they're cut and faceted, so if it was like $10 or $12, then you didn't buy a quartz crystal. If it was multifaceted, a quartz crystal would cost you, maybe several hundred dollars.
But then again, if you went to a place like Grieger's and you bought a rock crystal in its own natural shape, you could get it for anywhere from $5 to $15. That's an estimate, but approximately.
I see. Yes, I was going to ask, where would I get one?
It's much more powerful.
I think I know one place where I can get them. They're not cut.
Yeah, better that way.
Grieger's in Pasadena also has them.
That's not convenient for me.
Right.
Now, how about the pyramids? I haven't heard much about pyramids lately. Two or three years ago, it was quite a fad.
Right. In fact, it was quite a fad about 12 years ago when I first wrote Pyramid Power, and it became a bestseller. Thousands of years ago, of course.
It was a very big deal in Egypt, right.
Yes.
Still is.
Where can I get a pyramid? Just look around.
From our company, if you want one of the little mini Giza pyramids that's composed of a crystal that's charged in the Queen's Chamber and a piece of the Great Pyramid and the other stone combination, you can write to that address. They're called the mini Giza pyramids, and they're very powerful. Small pyramids.
Now, let's see. I didn't get your box number in Nevada, California, or the zip code.
Okay, well, number one. Oh, wait a minute.
Give it to me again.
If any of you miss our address or phone number, you can call the station.
Give it to me now. Box number what?
Okay, and ask, but it's for now, we'll give it to you again. It's P.O. Box 686.
Nevada, California. What's the zip?
94948.
949.
The phone number is 415-892-7594.
Could you repeat that?
415-892-7594.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And then I can write for the audio newsletter.
Okay, great.
Right, you can get everything there, Ruth.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank
bye
you,
bye.
Ruth. And we have Sina, is that? Sina on the line?
Sonia. Yes.
Okay.
Okay, I'd like to give Mr. Flanagan some information on the cable light.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's Kiva, INC, income, something like that. It's 912 Broadway, NE, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87102.
Okay.
All right.
And his phone number is 505-242-5200.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
So
okay. I gave some information also. It's an improved version of the Vitalite. Have you heard of the Vitalite?
Oh, the Vitalite, sure.
Right.
Oh, we know
right.
about that.
The full spectrum light?
That's John Osworth.
Huh?
That's Dr. John Osworth.
It's an improved version.
Oh, I see.
Okay. He says it's an improved version that it's a, it makes your water clear. It that's how many things he says.
Uh-huh. Well, I'd love to test it out, you know, in my laboratory with all my instruments, so it'd be great.
Okay, so when you get some information, how could I find out what you found out?
Just write it at that address.
Okay, because I haven't sent for it because I am not, you know, I don't believe in it really.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll check it out, and I'll see if there are any measurable changes in the water from it, and
it'll be in our audio newsletter.
And it'll be in one of our audio newsletters or on this show sometime when we're on again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Serena, does that help you?
Not Serena, it's Sonia.
Sonia.
Okay, Sonia.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right.
Bye.
Listen, if you just want to know something, you just ask the audience here. They've all got the answer.
That's right.
And let's see what Dix has on his mind. Hi, Dix.
Hi. Look, I've been trying to research for the Dean Drive. Have you ever heard of it? It was a contraption that was invented after World War II by a civil service guy when the government was asking for anything that would move or anything it would do. And he had a thing that I saw the demonstration of, which was a contraption of levers that was powered by just a drill press. And he'd set this contraption on a scale one way, and it would get heavier. Set it the other way, and get lighter, and then it moved left and right.
Yeah,
according
that was,
to
the Dean Drive.
Power that was put into the circular motion.
Right.
And they said it was impossible because the mathematics was all wrong.
That's called an inertial drive. It was invented, there are a number of them that were invented, but one of the most famous ones was invented by Dean, Dr. Dean.
Dean, yeah.
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 We tested that years ago. Dean was in our laboratory.
Yeah, I heard that they were supposed to test
it. We ran tests on it, and indeed it does work. But the only problem with it is that it creates what's called a unidirectional vibration or a vector force in one direction. But it does this by means of vibration, and unfortunately the mechanical equipment required to make it do any work that was worthwhile, when it reached a certain frequency, it vibrated so much that it would fly apart.
Yeah, it didn't develop anything at all in the way of a powerful thing. But it worked.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And it shows that Newton's laws need to be modified.
Well, we have found that there are a lot of the so-called laws of physics that are outmoded and are just not accurate anymore.
Yeah, the mathematics was all wrong, but I don't see where the mathematics would make it work as much as it did. But nevertheless...
Well, it's really a very simple device, and it just shows you that, in other words, Newton's law, you know, it says that for every action there is an equal and opposite reaction, but there should be one little bit added to it. For every action there is an equal and opposite reaction, but not at the same time.
Well, yeah. Dean was just a civil servant, and he wasn't a scientist at all or
right.
a physicist. But all he wanted to do was help the lever thing to be able to help the leverage situation.
No, it's a great principle, and there have been probably about five or six other patents that have come out on it since he developed his.
Well, okay, thanks a lot.
All right, Dix.
Thank you.
The Dean Drive. I hadn't heard about that in years, Patrick.
Right.
And but it never was able to do much work because of those restrictions that it placed upon itself.
Right.
We have John on the line. Hello, John.
Hi, Bill, Patrick, and Gail.
Hi.
How are you all this evening?
We're just fine.
Good. This is only the second time I've listened to this show, but I'm finding it very stimulating. And it's nice to find these types of shows on the radio.
Could I pause for a little extra stimulation here, John?
Certainly.
Okay, we'll be right.
Thanks of the flotation tanks.
Oh, I think it's great. You're talking about the idea that first originated with John Lilly, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it's great. I've only floated once, and that is, in a tank designed for it. We have a hot tub, and I float a lot in that. I just lay on my back and float and meditate. But the I think the flotation tank is really good. It's one of the best devices that I think anyone's ever developed. I'd love to have one where I could float every day, but it's definitely a way to gaining altered states in a natural way, and it's extremely pleasurable. It balances your body.
As long as they don't play rock music when you're in there.
No.
Yeah.
Play the ohm tape.
Yeah. I happen to have my own flotation tank.
Right.
And I have to agree with you. It is a tremendous way to achieve those profound states of relaxation, and it's almost like we're cheating because it's so very simple.
Right.
How would you like to have the ohm tape played in there like that?
I think that'd be great.
Oh boy,
that'd drive you crazy. I do believe.
I think that'd be
you'll
great.
Right out of your body.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people have said that. Since that's been available for the last couple of years, people have said they've had instantaneous experiences, out of body experiences, reincarnation, flashbacks, and a wide variety of things.
Are you talking about the tank, Gail?
No, I'm talking about the ohm tape.
The ohm tape.
I'd love to try it in some.
Well, speaking of the out-of-body thing, Bob Monroe was with us last week, and they use the flotation tanks at the Monroe Institute of Applied Sciences and bringing on the altered state of consciousness for a number of their explorers who then move out of body and do the marvelous explorations that they're doing.
Well, I'd like to learn or develop the ability to astral project or out-of-body experience.
So would I.
But, I intend to, actually. It's one of the many things that is on my list.
Well, I understand I got a traffic ticket on the astral level, so I'm grounded for a while.
But I would also like to ask Patrick, why does he feel that the tank isn't very popular?
Is not very popular?
Yeah.
Well, it's like all new things, like the Neurophone. I developed it 27 years ago, and it's only now getting popular. And unfortunately, when you have things like that, it takes a long time to educate the public.
I think one of the things may be the initial price of it, too.
Right, including the price.
Yeah, I think you're right. But actually, if you weighed the price against a flotation tank against the money that is spent on medicines and prescriptions every year.
Hey, listen, there's our music. John, we're going to take a break and be right back.
The Mormon Tabernacle Choir, and they were sounding the sound of home. Listen to this. It may do something to you.
This kind of slide it back down there in the background. That's an amazing recording. I think what we're going to do for you, Patrick, is that our good friend John Bedini has now developed a way using the beloved crystal to take a sine wave, like you would find on any piece of tape that that's on.
Right.
Convert that into digital, much
right.
as your Neurophone works, and
sure.
record that back onto tape in digital form.
Right.
And let the digital sound
fly right through the speakers. And
absolutely.
Through the speakers, you're now listening with your skin. And he has also just got his patent on a new little device that will take the monaural sound, digitally scramble it up, and it'll come out in stereo. So we just may make that stereo and send it to you.
Great.
All right. Let's go on with those who are in line. Boris, welcome aboard.
Hello again. I'm just holding my crystal here in my hand and seeing if Alm would light up.
Did it do anything?
The light isn't dazzling me right now. My question is about the neurophone. Does it bypass the cochlea in any way, or do you still have to go through the cochlea?
Well, if you have one functioning naturally, it's hard to bypass it. But there was once a test run on one of the earlier models of the neurophone. We didn't do this, but someone else did it. We didn't do it because I don't believe in animal testing, but... at one time, a test was run for a government institution in which they trained some dogs in their laboratory to respond to the neurophone type device, and then they removed entirely the inner ear on the dog so that they were nerve deaf. And then when they played the sound, the dog responded exactly in the same way, showing that the dog was hearing the sound through an alternate channel into the brain. And the neurophone... if you have a cochlea, it will stimulate your own hearing system as well as your skin hearing system. But most of the stimulation, let's say 99.9% of it, is through the skin and has nothing to do with the hearing, with the normal ears. An example, Harry Stein, who is a science writer, is a very well-known science writer, ran a test when he went to the dentist. He had a root canal, and the dentist numbed his jaw. And so when he got home, he had, you know, a good portion of his face was numb, you know, the trigeminal nerve. And so he placed the neurophone on his face, turned it on, and he couldn't hear any of it. It was absolutely dead. And then as the Novocaine started to wear off, he began to hear the sound. So this shows that the neurophone transmits information to the brain through, again, another channel.
Well, that certainly seems to be bypassing the cochlea, but what bothers me is the cochlea is changing the information into something unrelated, sort of like assembly language in a computer or something
well,
like that.
Well, that's why, see, the neurophone translates the information into a special digital code. In other words, that's why when I got my patent on the neurophone, in other words, you can't feed just ordinary sound into your skin. It won't work. So what you have to do is digitize the sound in a certain way and then feed it into your skin. And so the neurophone is like an electronic cochlea. In other words, it performs, it encodes the signal before it goes into the skin.
Well, that seems to be the question I was asking. In other words, it's synthesizing the cochlea.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
And would that be able to bypass any kind of nerve deafness, or would it bypass a damage to the cochlea?
We have a number of people who are nerve deaf. In other words, who have had, say, the nerves of the inner ear destroyed by meningitis or whatever, who can hear with the neurophone. But not all deaf people can hear with the neurophone. And we don't know why, but it may be due to... atrophy of the brain, in other words, an area where the neurophone stimulates sound or whatever. But there have been a number of people who were totally nerve deaf who could not be helped by bone conduction or by any other hearing device who could hear with the neurophone.
Well, that is certainly very encouraging. Well, that's what I wanted to know, and that answers my question. And I just want to add one little more bit here. I'm holding a crystal here. Since you people got me into crystals, I'm in electronics, and I just went down and got crystals from the store, from the rock shop, and put them in electronic apparatus, and I noticed they tune up right away. They don't have to have anything done to them, and they will typically tune at three different frequencies. And this one here... rings at 331 kilohertz, 512, and 560.
Right.
And I just wondered, is that the different hexagonal faces maybe that are ringing or what?
Well, a lot of the crystal, of course, crystals will vibrate at different frequencies depending on their dimensions. But there's also the fact that the crystal itself is a highly structured, in other words, what we're talking about is a lattice of electrical charges on the surface of the crystal. And, for example, when you put the crystal in water, rather than the vibration of the crystal, we're talking about this lattice of electrical charges is affecting the water by hydrogen bonding. On the other hand, if the crystals also emit phonon signals, in other words, phonon packets or waveforms that have nothing to do with the actual vibratory resonance of the crystal. We're talking about much, much higher frequencies. So there are a lot of things going on in a crystal, and by cutting a crystal so that it vibrates at harmonics of according to the golden ratio, you get a much, much more powerful output. So it's pretty complex.
Yes, I guess so. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Boris, I hope that helps you a lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Good night.
I'm Bill Jenkins. Tonight, you're listening to Open Mic, and Gail Flanagan, and guys, you just don't get by with anything with this audience. Murray wants to know why milk is bad. Is that right, Murray?
Yes, that's correct. Doctor, near the end of the last hour, you mentioned in passing that milk was very bad for you. And for some reason, you sounded like the kind of guy I'd like to hear go into more detail about that. So if you don't mind, would you please?
Sure. Well, especially cow's milk. But, you know, all babies need milk when they're growing because they need the calcium and the minerals and things like that, especially when the milk comes from the same species that you belong to. For example, babies, you know, when consuming mother's milk, God or the divine architect of the universe created the proper amino acid balance and mineral balance and so forth so that we would grow, you know, strong, proper bodies. And cow's milk, for example, was designed for cows, and cows have a much larger bone structure and a whole different
rate of growth
than we do, so they require a different balance of milk. And humans are especially Caucasians, that is in the Western world, we're the only ones that consume milk after we reach the state of weaning, because the way nature designed this and the way God designed this was that when we reach a certain stage, we're supposed to be weaned off of milk and never use milk again. Many people, as a result, most people have a milk allergy that they aren't even aware of.
What are some of the signs of the milk allergy? And I know this isn't a health show exactly, but if you don't mind.
Right. Well, Gail and I, for example, Gail and I have been pure vegetarians for a number of years. Gail's been a pure vegetarian now for about 17 years, and she hasn't had any animal products at all for 17 years. And the end result of that is that she's never had a cold for 17 years. And if you get a cold, most people who get colds consume dairy products in one form or the other, whether it's milk or cheese or whatever. And what happens is you keep putting this junk in, this food into your body that is not compatible with the body, and sometime or other your body just starts to object to this, and it manifests in different forms, in the form of a cold or the flu or something like that. And Gail and I have never had a cold or any symptoms of a cold since I stopped drinking milk. And the best way to test that is to lay off or stop taking all milk or dairy products for 30 days. And then if you just drink one sip of milk, your nose will feel like somebody plugged it up with cheese. In other words, you'll instantly get stuffed up, showing the tremendous production of white blood cells in defense of this foreign substance, which is milk, that is going into the body. And, you know, we're subject to a lot of advertising and bombardment by the milk industry telling us that we should eat cheese and drink milk and ice cream and all these things. And they're really very bad for you.
I've not been able to drink milk since I was a very, very young boy.
You're lucky.
Because I would immediately plug up. And
right.
That's exactly
hard to breathe.
Yeah, I was sitting here drinking a big glass of milk, and so your comment really struck a nerve with me. Well, okay, well, then all I have to say is thanks a lot for your show, Bill. I really enjoy it.
Well, thank you, Murray.
And egg bock to everybody.
There you go.
All right. Bye now.
You're on the right channel there. And Kay, what's on your leg?
The other thing about Milksville, just very quickly, is that it, I mean, really, what is it? It's the mucus of lactating mammals.
Okay. You certainly did a great deal for the ice cream industry. All right, Kay, lactating mucus is what it is. What's on your mind?
I'm here.
Yes.
I want to know what their opinion is of what happens between the mental and physical bodies of people who are considered channels and what happens when they do receive.
When they do what?
When they do receive.
A channel. When a channel is receiving information from sources other than his own consciousness.
Or a higher form of his own consciousness.
Perhaps.
Well, what... because I know that there are certain unusual manifestations that happen with people that do this. Not necessarily visible, but in their health. And I'm kind of curious if you have looked into that at all.
What kind of health manifestations, Kay, are you talking about?
Well, I'm not sure. Is she... She's not talking about the neurophone, obviously. She's talking about receiving...
No, she's talking about a channel.
Yeah. Most people eat very poor diets, and as a result are in a state of imbalance to begin with. And people who are very sensitive to external influences, in other words, people who are sensitive, say, to other information or channeling or whatever, other dimensions, can, because of that sensitivity and because most of them don't eat properly, in other words, that multiplies.